This is a special edition on 102.3 KRMG, Tulsa's news and talk. The KRMG Morning News 8 a.m. in-depth hour starts now.
Good morning. It is 8 a.m. It is a KRMG Morning News 8 a.m. in-depth hour on the COVID vaccines headed to our state. Over the next hour, we hope to answer as many of your vaccine questions as possible, whether it's about the timeline or the side effects, which vaccine might be right for you, which might be wrong. Whatever's on your mind, hit the open mic button on the KRMG app, and we will try to get you an answer. What we know in a nutshell is Oklahoma's first 33,000 doses of the Pfizer vaccine should be in the state within days.
KRMG goes in depth.
Fox 23 and KRMG's Justin Eric gets us started.
Well, those who work and live at nursing homes are going to be first on the list to get the vaccine. Now, that includes healthcare workers as well who have been on the front line of this pandemic from the start. And for a handful of them, they can agree it cannot come quick enough.
20 million people should get vaccinated in just the next several weeks.
Oklahoma could start seeing COVID-19 vaccines as early as next week. In a four-phase plan, the Oklahoma State Department of Health focused on at-risk individuals first. Long-term care residents and staff, healthcare workers providing direct COVID-19 care, and emergency COVID-19 first responders. State health experts say it would take care of over 82,000 Oklahomans. Tulsa Health Department's Ellen Nimitello encouraging Oklahomans to do some research.
Make an informed decision. Look at the facts, look at the data, ask the experts, and then make the decision that you think is best for you and for your family.
In phase two, by January, remaining first responders and outpatient COVID healthcare workers can get it, and any adult 65 years or older. Phases three and four don't have a date attached to it. Teachers, students, and staff in educational settings, and essential business workers could get the vaccine. And lastly, everyone else, roughly 550,000 more Oklahomans. According to Jonathan Roberts with CVS Health, it would be as easy as getting a flu shot.
They'll come in at their scheduled time. They'll meet with the pharmacist or technician. They'll get a record card with the vaccination that they got. We'll also email them that record.
And the state says they will prioritize when they can what places get the vaccine first. That can be based on how much PPE they have, the age of some of the workers, exposure levels, that kind of thing.
Issues that matter to you. Expanded on the KRMG Morning News 8 a.m. in-depth hour.
We've had 35 deaths in Oklahoma yesterday. Got those CDC estimates of the daily national death tolls that are going to be larger than 9/11 or Pearl Harbor. It sounds like every day for the next several weeks. Now, this vaccine literally couldn't get here soon enough. And, Rick, well, we're trying to establish a connection with Dr. Dart, but literally this couldn't get here soon enough.
No, and here's something that's really to keep in mind to be happy about. Not only is the Pfizer vaccine coming and the Moderna, and we've talked so much about those, Dan, but remember, there are other vaccines out there being worked on that are in the stage three of their clinical trials as well. There could be four or five total vaccines ready in the next maybe couple to several months, and some of the even the latest recommendations we have for people who will be getting vaccines for, you know, you and I who maybe don't have the problems is, you know, maybe early summer. So that's, and we've been through this a long time, and that's still a ways to wait. But that is really good news.
You talked to a guy named Bruce Taylor about what it was like to take part in the clinical trials for the Moderna vaccine. And he has a really interesting story. Again, Bruce Taylor's his name. Well, let's go ahead and meet him now.
Allow me to introduce you to someone who has been there, done that.
My name is Bruce Taylor.
Bruce was born and raised in Oklahoma, as a matter of fact, in the Tulsa Prior area. He still has business here, although he lives in Florida. I ask how he became involved in these clinical trials.
We simply made a phone call, and I talked to them, and they said, yes, absolutely, we'd love to have you. So I think I went in the next day and took about 4 hours to go through a mini physical and the paperwork, and they signed me up. And that was about 3 months ago.
He knew to make that call because of an unfortunate time in his life. His first wife, who was now passed away, was very ill.
I literally lived at the Mayo Clinic for almost 3 years and was at the Mayo Clinic off and on for 6 or 7 years.
During that time, he learned a lot about trials and knew how to proceed.
I was always reading about the clinical trials, so I was quite familiar with how they operated.
He did this along with his then fiance, now wife, and a friend of his. No one knew if they had the real vaccine or the placebo. After his first injection, he knew pretty quickly which he had.
I had a very strong reaction to the shot, a very sore arm. I had a raised red splotch about probably 4 inches in diameter. Yeah, within about 18 hours of the shot, it was kind of large.
He had a couple of weeks between his first and second injection, so he decided to do something on his own.
I took it upon myself after I received my first shot to go out and order an antibody test. I tested positive for antibodies. I had not had corona prior to that, and they test you for that, so I knew that I'd never had corona. The only way I got it was thanks to the shot.
When he went back in for the second shot, they warned him he'd have some reactions, and it all came true.
That reaction will probably be a sore arm once again, maybe even more sore than the last time, and I should mention, it wasn't like a flu shot. This was like somebody took their fist and punched you really hard, or you were kicked by a horse. It hurt. They warned me also that it was likely I would have flu-like symptoms. So I received the shot about 2 o'clock in the afternoon once again. I came home. I had no problems, went to bed, and I woke up at 4 a.m. the next morning with fever and chills. Eventually ended up with a fever of about 101.8, something like that. I had body aches, and I was pretty much in bed all day long. But it came on very suddenly. It was almost as if a switch came on at 4 a.m., and at 5 p.m., that switch got turned off. And it was really kind of amazing. I went from, you know, feeling pretty bad to just, boom, all of a sudden I was okay. I was fine that evening. The next morning, I actually felt better than I had felt in years.
Since that time, no recurrences of any problems, and I'm going to assume here that you've not had the virus.
No, I have not had the virus. I've been in the presence of people who have had. My next door neighbor came down with it. I was around him, no problem.
That's all good news, but because of what happened on that second vaccination, he does have some advice.
You need to plan on taking the second day off, but the third day, go mow the lawn or something because you're going to feel really good.
Now, Bruce's reactions could be different than yours or mine, but he does suggest everyone get it when it's time. He's also been told you might need an update just like you would with a regular flu vaccine.
You're probably protected for a long time, but the virus will mutate. The last thing that I read said I think they've already found 32 or 34 mutations in the virus, but they're not significant. They don't cause it to be more deadly. They don't cause it to be any more transmissible, but it's likely to mutate, and at some point you may need a booster shot or a slightly different variation of the vaccine, but that I think is probably some years down the road.
Rick Corey, 102.3 KRMG, Tulsa's News and Talk.
So many questions after hearing that. Let's go to Dr. Bruce Dart, Tulsa Health Department. Good morning. Good to talk to you.
You too, guys. Hope you're doing well.
Doing well. Before we talk about the vaccine distribution and all those different questions, just kind of give us a picture of the situation in Tulsa this morning. Extremely critical, extremely dangerous, I think, is one of the ways the map is characterizing it. Just give us the synopsis of where we stand this morning.
Well, you know, if you look at our zip code map, we've got we had to elevate some of our risk categories to severe risk, extreme severe risk, and extreme severe risk too. So, you know, and that's pretty much pervasive throughout Tulsa County. So the virus is transmitting very efficiently and all throughout our communities and neighborhoods.
We have a gentleman here in the building, Phil Price, who puts together really good graphics showing the trend lines and things like that. And one thing we notice is that the number of new cases has dipped just slightly. That seems to have stabilized. But Dr. Dart, the number of hospitalizations and especially the number of deaths, that graph just points almost straight up.
And that's why we're so concerned, because we're starting to see more severe health impacts of those who've been exposed and infected. And so you're right that the vaccine couldn't come soon enough.
Okay, let's get into the distribution. What do you know so far? 33,000 doses of the Pfizer vaccine coming to the state. How many are going to come to Tulsa County?
We're hearing somewhere in the 5,800 category. You know, that number is somewhat fluid, but we'll definitely get our portion of it. And we are been working very hard with all of our partners here, and we're ready to receive it, and more importantly, ready to get it in some arms.
When are you going to get it? Do you know?
No, we don't. But I think everyone's been saying we're fully expected hopefully in the next few days. Hoping that, you know, we've been waiting for the FDA to make their decisions. They did that yesterday, so we're hoping that it'll be shipped very soon now.
Okay. We're going to talk to Ellen Vitello coming up in just a little bit, too, and we'll ask her this question. But as far as you know, those 5,800 doses, are all of those going in the arms of healthcare professionals, or are they going to be divvied up between healthcare professionals and residents of long-term care facilities?
We'll start to divvy those up. We've got specific strike teams for healthcare workers and long-term care facilities. So, and the good thing is that, as you know, Moderna's coming out very soon as well. So we expect in the next few weeks to have kind of a cascade of vaccines.
Yeah, I was going to ask.
Make sure that we get all of our phases.
Yeah. Is it like, do you expect shipments on a daily basis starting, you know, sometime next week? Or is it going to be dribs and drabs? You get 5,800 doses here and 4,000 here, maybe 12,000 two days later. How do you think that will work?
More than likely, it'll be... I'm trying to wrap my mind around this because really we're not really sure. You know, we're told that we're getting specific allotments but we don't really know what the time frame is for those allotments, and that's the issue, and that's why I hesitated. But it looks like every week or two we'll be getting new allotments, starting with Pfizer and then of course Moderna after that, and I think we'll be getting enough to complete specific series and then let us move on to the next phases.
As always, Rick Corey is with me. Rick, just jump in at any time with questions.
And I wanted to ask, and we talked about this, Dr. Dart, you talked about how you're excited about Moderna because it's a one-shot vaccine, that kind of thing. With all the other ones we're hearing coming along the pike, are there any of the other vaccines coming that you know about, you've heard about, that you're more excited about than others?
And let me correct that. Moderna is a two-shot vaccine, and so far all the data we've seen is that they're all pretty much equally effective so far. Of course, not all the trials are completed, but we're feeling very good about at least Pfizer and Moderna. We know that AstraZeneca is coming down the pike as well, and so far the results are very similar and very encouraging, and which is really what I think the important thing for people to know.
The double dose, the two shots, is something different with this vaccine than most vaccines that we're used to, and that led to this question via open mic.
If you get the first dose of the vaccine, are you guaranteed the second?
Yeah, do you schedule a time then for your second when you get your first?
Absolutely. When you call and we schedule for that first one, we'll also schedule for that second one, and we will hound you to make sure you get in for that second dose.
Okay. You're not going to be able to forget about this one, right?
Absolutely not.
Okay. And this goes to the cost.
For those of us on Medicare, will it cover the cost of the vaccine or will we have out-of-pocket expense?
There is no expense the way I understand it, right?
That's correct. And there might be some administration fees built to insurance, but the public will not be paying any for this vaccine. We just want to get it in arms, and that's all we care about.
Although we did hear that there was some funding running out for it, what do you know about that?
You know, not too much so far. Still waiting to see what Congress is going to do. And bottom line is that, you know, we're not going to charge for any vaccine that we give out, and I think private providers, as I said before, might just charge an administration fee to vaccine. So, I mean, to insurance companies, we all have the same goal here, and that's to get the vaccine out into the community. And that's our goal, and we're going to make sure that happens.
Yeah. To that end, and we'll let you go after this, but your staff has been through the ringer the last 10 months. And, you know, with testing, with everything else, now you add vaccination on top of that. How are you staffing this?
That's a really good question, and my staff, you know, God bless them all, have been amazing. And so we're trying to figure out how to develop the bandwidth to do both. And we know at some point testing might lag as we focus more on vaccine. I doubt if we can do both at 100%, but we're going to do our best to make sure that those who need a test get a test, and those who want a vaccine get a vaccine.
All right. Dr. Dart, thank you. Sorry for a little technical snafu to start out with there, and we'll talk to you again next Friday, if not sooner, all right?
Hey, you guys be good, okay?
All right, you too. Stay safe. That is Tulsa Health Department Executive Director Dr. Bruce Dart.
Now, back to the KRMG Morning News, 8 a.m. In-Depth Hour. Yeah, yeah.
being on air. We need guinea pigs before it makes it our way.
So do I detect a note of sarcasm in that young man's voice?
I'll do it.
Absolutely, I would do it.
No trouble with that.
I don't know
all.
If we need the theater of doing it on air, especially since this is radio. Ow! Oh, I just got the shot. No, I think we'll just get it. As soon as I can get it, I'm going to get it. That's for sure.
Me too.
8 a.m. In-Depth Hour, taking your questions via open mic on the KRMG app and joined by Dr. Doug Drevets, the Chief of Infectious Diseases for OU Health. Dr. Drevets, good morning. Thanks for being with us.
My pleasure. Great to be here.
Ask you the same thing I started out with Dr. Bruce Dart with, and that's just from where you sit. Kind of give us a picture of where Oklahoma is in this pandemic as of this morning.
Well, we're not in a great place, although there are some hopeful signs that maybe the numbers of new infections are leveling out. You know, the hospitals, and in particular the intensive care units, are quite full. The hospital workforce is tired and somewhat stressed. You know, that said, I think the vaccine is a light at the end of a long tunnel, and so I think most people are looking forward to it. At least I hope most people are looking forward to it.
I am, but some people seem to think that light's a train coming right at them, and they want to just wait and see, you know, who dies from the vaccine before they get it. That's the way some of our listeners are putting it. What would you say to them?
You know, I would say that this is not what happened in the clinical trials, and, you know, tens of thousands of people have received this, and, you know, it seemed to be very safe. You know, when it gets rolled out to hundreds of thousands or even tens of millions or hundreds of millions of people, you have to expect that, you know, even if you had a million people all together and you took a phone call and said, I'm going to give you a fake vaccine right now, and then hung up the phone, that over the next period of time, some of those people are going to have heart attacks, strokes, all sorts of things that had nothing to do with your phone call. So many of the things that people think are attributed to vaccines really aren't. That said, you do have to use a bit of common sense in this. And for those people who are just absolutely against vaccines, and particularly this vaccine, you know, I'm not trying to convince them. I just hope that they don't stand in the way of somebody else who needs it, who wants to get it.
You know, I've heard several people say, well, I don't know what's in it. Why would I get a shot not knowing what's in it? But to them, I say, and I saw this meme, this is not original, do you know what's in the Pop-Tart you had for breakfast this morning? Chances are you probably don't. But having said that, Dr. Drevets, what is in it?
So it is actually reasonably well known what's in it, because all of this has to be published. And the active ingredient is a small piece of what's called messenger RNA, and that's part of the genetic material of the virus, not of humans or of cows or sheep or anything else. It's a small piece of the virus's genetic material. And then when this gets taken up by cells in our body, then our cells will make a protein out of this genetic material, because it encodes a protein, and this protein is the one that the virus uses to bind and attach and invade our cells. And so by using this method, then we make an antibody and also what's called cell-mediated immunity against the very part of the virus that is used to invade our cells. You know, when you get infected with a germ, your body makes antibodies and cell-mediated immune responses to many different parts of that organism, but only some of those parts actually prevent the infection and help you overcome it. And so by using just a small piece of the virus's genetic material, the manufacturers were able to target the immune response just to that portion of the virus that it uses to invade our cells, and then that's how you stop the infection. The other key ingredient in the vaccine is what's called a lipid nanoparticle. So it's a, you know, sort of like a fat little tiny piece of a balloon of fat. And this is how your cells are going to essentially eat the vaccine product.
This is the piece of cheese you put your dog pill in to get your dog to swallow the pill, basically.
Yeah, you could look at that, or it could be a... you know, a pig in the blanket, so to speak, kind of a thing, too.
There you go. Listen, I know we've just scratched the surface here, and I've already got to take a break, and it's because of the technical snafu we had earlier. But we've got a whole half hour with you here. Please stand by. Many more questions to come.
Issues that matter to you. Expanded on the KRMG Morning News 8 a.m. In-Depth Hour.
Joined by Dr. Doug Drevets, who is the Chief of Infectious Diseases for OU Health. Dr. Drevets, one of the questions I had this morning is we listened to Bruce Taylor describe what it was like to be in the phase three clinical trials of the Moderna vaccine. He got two shots, said the first one felt like somebody just walloped him in the arm, and it really hurt. And that was gone about a day later. And then he got that second shot, and he was sick for almost exactly 24 hours, it sounds like, with really strong flu-like symptoms that laid him low. But what we're hearing from, for instance, in the UK, where they started distributing the Pfizer vaccine this week, of course, that's Pfizer, this is Moderna, but we're hearing much less in the way of side effects, like, yeah, a little soreness around the injection site, maybe some achiness in my joints, but nothing like what Bruce Taylor is describing. Are there different concentrations in clinical trials than there are in what comes out to the public?
You know, by the time the manufacturer gets to the phase three clinical trials, it's a pretty standard dose, and this is the dose of the vaccine in this case that the manufacturer plans on releasing to the public. In the phase one and the phase two studies, there are different doses that are used indeed, and this helps the scientists who are developing the product gauge the immune response, and they always want to try to use the minimal dose that's effective, and that's sort of a standard in the industry, I think.
Doctor, as to go along with that, everyone's physiology is somewhat different, much like how everyone is who's had COVID, the people who have had it, it's affected them somewhat differently. And certainly underlying conditions were one thing. So some of this just have to do with your physiology personally?
To a degree, that's correct. And, you know, I haven't seen the detailed Moderna data that I have for the Pfizer product, so I'll just have to defer on that one, other than saying what, you know, I've seen what they put out in the press releases. Pfizer has released, and the FDA has released, very granular data on the types of reactions that they've had with that. And, you know, it seems to me that the COVID vaccine that Pfizer, at least the Pfizer product, is fairly similar to the Shingrix vaccine that many folks who are over 50 have already had in terms of muscle aches, headache, fatigue, shivering, fever, and pain at the injection site. So, you know, you do feel things, and one thing that was noted with the Pfizer product is that younger individuals had a kind of, you might say, more stronger or more noticeable side effects than did older individuals. And that tracked down to folks under the age of 18, and then the 18 to, I believe it was the 50 age group, 55, and then also for 55 over. So that's sort of how they broke it down. So the younger you were, the stronger your side effects. But again, none of these side, I shouldn't say none, very few of these side effects were severe. And by severe, that means bad enough to make you change your day's activity, in a sense.
Really? Okay, because listening to Bruce, it sounded like maybe it changed his day's activity. So I'm worried that people will hear that kind of anecdotal discussion about the side effects, and it'll keep them from getting the vaccine.
Yeah, that is a challenge. And so I think the best thing for the medical professional to say is say, yeah, you know, it could hurt, but it works, and it's definitely better than either having COVID-19 or transmitting it to your loved one. And, you know, I'm in the age group where I received the Shingrix vaccine, and, yeah, I felt like I had the flu the next day. I had my vaccine on a Friday, and so that was on a Saturday that I wasn't working. But, you know, I would much rather have those symptoms and get over them in a day or two than have shingles. And so I think most people are going to make that kind of a risk assessment.
Dr. Doug Drevets is the chief of infectious diseases at OU Health. We're taking your questions about the vaccines via open mic.
Hey, once I've had COVID and been confirmed that I have COVID, I've recovered, is there any reason for me to get a vaccine? Also, if I've had COVID or had the vaccine, is there any reason for me to continue to wear a mask? Thank you.
Two great questions, Dr. Drevets.
Those are really good questions. And so, number one, if you have had COVID, I would still recommend getting the vaccine. Most of the early clinical studies that I've looked at for the Moderna product and for the Pfizer product show that you actually get a better immune response from the vaccine than you do from having the real infection. And this probably has to do with the fact that the vaccine is very targeted to a particular part of the what's called the neutralizing antibody. So I would still recommend it. You know, in 5 years from now, maybe we'll know that if you had COVID-19 and you were sick from it, that your immune response is going to be lifelong. But I just don't know that today. Secondly, if you've already had COVID, I think there is still some reason for you to wear a mask, particularly when you're around other people that you don't want to possibly transmit it to. Now, obviously, this is a nuanced answer, and the answer is because if you've had it, you've obviously survived it, you do have a degree of immunity to it. I don't know for sure yet, even if you don't feel sick from getting it again, if that also prevents you from just carrying it up in your nasal passages. And that's what we call carriage, and that's a very common thing that happens in infectious diseases. People can carry a germ up in their nose but not be sick by it, and yet you still have it and you can still transmit it to somebody else. So I think until those data come out, I think it's the better part of valor to, you know, protect other people. And lastly, again, getting back to the fact, I just don't know how long your immune response will continue to protect you. So a year from now, the answer could change. 6 months from now, we'll have data on folks who've been infected for over a year. And so this is an evolving situation, and we're sort of walking through it together.
I hate nose germs. I want to point that out first.
Yeah.
I want to make one point about Bruce before we move on. His symptoms on that second shot were 13 hours. He slept through almost all of them, and he did make the point that he felt once it stopped, it stopped like that. It just stopped. And the next day, and from that point forward, he's felt better than he ever has. And this was really interesting, Dr. Drevets. He is a diabetic who uses one of those glue patches that holds on so you can read your blood sugar with your iPhone. He'd always had an allergic response to the glue. After he took the vaccine, he didn't.
Weird.
He reported that as a positive side effect, not saying that those things are going to happen for other people, but his effects, although bad, you know, as far as he felt bad, 13 hours he slept through it, and then he's felt better than he ever has. That's the reason enough to get this vaccine.
Isn't that interesting? You know, when you look at the Pfizer data carefully, on the side effects of headache and fatigue, interestingly, you know, over 30% of people who had the first dose of placebo also had a headache, compared to a little bit over 50% who had the first dose of the vaccine. And about the same percentage of people who had the first dose of the placebo also had fatigue. And the placebo was just a little bit of salt water. And so, you know, folks just don't like getting stuck in the shoulder, in the deltoid muscle. And so, although, you know, a lot of people report headache and some of these things and malaise, a lot of those symptoms were also seen in the placebo group.
My default setting is fatigue, so I understand that. Dr. Drevets, hang on a little bit. We're gonna get into a moral question about this vaccine that we've heard a couple of times via open mic in just a moment. Dr. Doug Drevets, chief of infectious diseases at OU Health, is with us. We'll be joined in a moment by Eleni Mantello, the manager of immunizations for the Tulsa Health Department. But before we do that, Dr. Drevets, a moral question. We've got this a couple of times via open mic.
Was the vaccine created using cell structures of aborted children?
I think you may have actually answered this in a roundabout way earlier. What do you say to that?
I would see no reason for that to have happened. You know, you're looking for genetic material out of a virus, and they didn't even, you know, would not even have had to have used live virus in this. Once the sequence was known, you synthesize the sequence that you need, and that's what you pop into the lipoprotein and the lipid nanoparticle.
Okay.
So I just can't conceive of anything like that having been done.
Okay. Let's bring in Ellen Emitello, and we've only got a few minutes left, Ellen. I'm sorry about that, but we've got to get right into it with you about the plans for immunizing people in Tulsa and Tulsa County. This is all falling on your shoulders, isn't it?
Oh, no, it is falling on a whole team of shoulders, and as a community, we really are preparing for administering the vaccine. And good morning. Thank you for having me on today.
Dr. Dart said 5,800 doses of the Pfizer vaccine. That's what we're going to get first?
Yeah, that's what we have been told to expect. So of that, as soon as it becomes fully approved and available as a community, really, we have plans to start administering it immediately to the priority groups.
What will those initial vaccinations look like? Where will they happen? Who will administer them?
Okay. They will be given, like I said, to the priority groups, which will mostly be the frontline healthcare workers who are taking care of COVID patients, as well as long-term care facility and looking at possibly the EMTs and paramedics who, again, would have direct contact with COVID patients.
So are they going to be called into sites to get their shots? Will you go into their workplaces to hand them out? How's that going to work?
Yeah, that's a great question. Actually, right now, all of the different healthcare facilities have been given an allocation of that 5,800 based on the number of healthcare workers that they have that would fit that criteria. And they are providing a list of individuals that they designate are fit the criteria to receive that vaccine. Those individuals will be contacted, and appointments then will be set for both the first and the second vaccine, so that they can come and receive that, and the locations then will be given when that appointment is made.
Every good manager has a timeline. When on your timeline do you have it plotted for the general population in Tulsa to start getting these?
There are so many unknown and fluid factors. My hope would be that possibly late second quarter of next year is the projected time when it will be available to everyone. The other thing is we will be receiving vaccine on a weekly or biweekly basis based on availability and how quickly we can administer that. But as more vaccine becomes available, there are other providers around Tulsa who have signed up to be COVID vaccine providers. So as soon as the vaccine becomes more available, there will be several other options in other places where people will be able to receive this vaccine.
Do you have the facilities to keep it cold and the staff to do the injections? Are you confident in that right now?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, there's been some designated places across the state and designated places in Tulsa County that can handle that extreme cold or the minus 60, minus 70 degrees Celsius storage. And those partners are willing to receive the vaccine and store it. And after that, once we get the vaccine out of that ultra-cold storage, there's about 5 days that it can be at refrigerated temperatures before being administered. So based on the appointments, we know how many vaccines will be given in a day and can take that many vaccines out of the ultra-cold storage so that they're ready to administer.
Okay. I'm going to leave it up to you and Dr. Drevets, and we'll start with Dr. Drevets. Just 30 seconds on why people should get this vaccine.
If you want to get back to what you think is a normal life or a normal daily activities, go for the vaccine.
Ellen Emitello?
Vaccines are safe and effective and historically have been proven to limit the disease in a community and in individuals. And really, the COVID vaccine is so exciting that it's very effective and it can limit disease. And like Dr. Drevets said, it should get us back to some sense of normalcy.
Will you send somebody to immunize me and Rick on the air?
Whenever you meet the priority group,
okay.
Sure,
all right.
We can do that.
Oh, excellent. Dan's infirmed. He needs it now.
Thank you, Ellen. Thank you, Dr. Drevets and Bruce Taylor and Dr. Bruce Dart. Great open mics this morning. Thank you to everybody for a wonderful 8 a.m. in-depth hour.